This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Steven, my friend, long time no see. I'm super excited for this episode of TFL Talking Trucks.
Yeah, nice to see you, buddy. Thanks for having me on, and hello to all the TFL viewers and listeners. And I'm sure some of you out there are familiar with me from my time with TFL. And yeah, glad to be back.
Hell yeah. So if you're just listening to us, to this podcast, we have Steven Elmer from Truck King as a guest on this particular episode. And the real kind of a topic is behind the scenes of truck testing, right? You do a heck of a lot of testing in Canada, and you do off-road testing and also, you know, towing with pickup trucks and SUVs. And we do something very similar, but kind of in a different environment, right? We're here in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, which is a lot of it is pretty dry out here, as you know. I just wanted to catch up with you because I haven't talked to you in detail in quite some time, dude.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And we've been busy. We've been, running things off road and towing and, yeah, doing all that proper truck testing over here on the channel. So, and I got three little ones keeping me busy too, who are all under the age of 7. So, yeah, I'm doing the dad thing right now.
And you also had an amazing family trip, right? Just very recently with your dad and your son.
We did, yeah. In October, we loaded up in an F-150 Raptor, and we drove from our house just outside of Toronto, Ontario, down to Lake Havasu City, Arizona, for the Ford Raptor Rally. So essentially, this is an event for Raptor owners. There was like 400 Raptor owners there. They come from all over the country, too. There was one other Canadian there, actually. They were from Elliott Lake, Ontario, which is even further north than where we are. So that was cool. And then people from all over the states, Michigan, Washington, New York, you name a state, there was somebody there from it. So that was really cool. And yeah, man, we had an epic road trip. Like you said, it was my mom, my dad, and my son, Otis, four of us all in one truck, seeing, you know, the heartland of America. And, you know, I've traveled a ton for this job. I'm lucky, but there was still a bunch of places I went to I'd never been before, like Oklahoma and the panhandle of Texas. And so, yeah, it was cool, man. And we got to see the Raptor do what I think the Raptor does best, which is on a long road trip, it's so nice and comfortable. And then you get out in the desert and it absolutely rips. So we really got to experience that.
Yeah, because, people talk about, you know, capability of pickup trucks, specifically like our F-150 Raptor, right? Big tires, big, you know, shocks and big suspension. But it's also a great cruiser, right? I mean,
yeah,
it just cruises.
It's crazy. And I feel like so often these days in every video I make, I'm talking about how there's less compromise than ever, right? Like we're just so lucky now that you can get a vehicle that's so good off-road and on-road. There was the time when, yeah, you'd live with it on-road because it was so good off-road. And that still exists in some places. You know, when I get in Big Green, yeah, that exists. It's not a great truck to drive on road, my old 85 K10. But it's worth it for the off-road, where now you get in a modern truck, you don't give up anything on road, man. Even with 35s on it, even with 37s on it. Like the BFGs are quiet. They don't sing out. Yeah, it's less compromised than ever. And I think the Raptor is a great example of that.
Yeah, and of course you're paying for all that stuff too, but absolutely, I agree. I mean, the prices of some of these trucks is very high, but you're also getting a lot for that money, right?
For sure. Yeah, that's another, I mean, it's a common theme, right? I feel like in every video I end by saying this truck's incredible. That Raptor we drove was, I think, $115,000 Canadian. So, you know, for well over $100,000, it better be incredible, right?
Yeah.
That's a crazy amount of money for that truck. Yeah, just talking about the products we have now, less compromise, man. It was cool.
Well, sweet. Well, I wanted to ask you a couple of things, and also maybe we can catch up a little bit later about Big Green, because
Yeah, sure.
Big Green, it's you know, dear to my heart as well. You know,
Sure.
it's a pickup truck that TFL owned for a little while, and you own it now. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about one of my favorite things that Truck King does, and you even did a little bit of that when we were working together. Is the Hydroline,
Right.
because can you just explain what that is a little bit, and also some of the recent stuff you may have done there?
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, the first part of that is just what is the Hydroline, and it's a funny thing, which is really regional. I don't even think I realized how regional it was until I started saying it on the internet, and everyone was like, "Yeah, Hydroline, what the heck is that? Is that because there's water?" No, it's because we live in the province of Ontario, and here in Ontario, we commonly just call electricity hydro. That's just what we call it, because a lot of our electricity is hydroelectricity. And the main electricity supplier in Ontario is Hydro One. So here, hydro and electricity are just synonymous. So all we're saying is it's a power line trail. You see it in the video. It's cut there because there's a power line. But for us, it's a hydro line. So let me start by explaining that.
Yes.
And yeah, that's the one trail on our property that, you know, has always been there because it's a hydro easement, so the guys can get in and work on the line. And as a result of that, over the last probably 60, 70 years, there's been so many hydro vehicles stuck up that trail. So it's just become a mess, especially the one section we run. There's always water there. It's spring fed. So it doesn't matter, you know, what the weather is. There's basically always water and always mud because it comes right out the bottom of that hill.
So
and
it is combined, it's related to water.
It is. There is water there. Yes, there is water. So I can understand how you would make that assumption.
Yeah.
And thank God there's water there. Again, that's one of the great things we're very lucky to have. Because as you know, yeah, most places, they don't always have mud, right? Or you got to wait till it rains. We don't have to wait till it rains. We always have the mud there. And then, yeah, the ruts, you know, over the years have just gotten so deep and so many vehicles have been up there. So it's just really squishy and nasty. And there's tons of friggin' mosquitoes up there in the summertime. So we hike up there and get absolutely eaten alive. But that's, you know, I always say we're giving blood literally to make these videos.
blood, and yeah, sweat, and tears, right?
Totally, man. And that's, I mean, you want to talk about truck testing. That is what it takes sometimes, right? It's not the same as testing, you know, a RAV4 with your family. Truck testing really does take some real work.
Yeah.
And being out there in some sloppy, nasty conditions is all part of it. And that's really what the Hydroline is, man. It's just sloppy, nasty mud. We have a bit of a mixture of clay too. So it's that kind of really sticky mud. It cakes the tires up really, really fast. So yeah, it's always been a great test. And you know, we have sort of a mud pit with full of water and then immediately goes into a hill that's got a bunch of loose rocks on it. So that's always, it's always a good test. And actually, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this too, because what I love about it is I've run that trail, I don't know, 100,000 times, right? Like I've run it so many times. I'm so hyper aware of every kind of rock, every bump. So when I take vehicles through, I'm like, oh man, I didn't hit that rock that I normally hit. Or, oh my gosh, this thing is dragging like crazy where I don't normally drag. So I love having sort of a standardized trail too, because I'm so familiar with it that I feel like I get a great sense for a vehicle just because I know, oh yeah, compared to the last thing, this was dragging or this wasn't dragging. I'm sure you must feel that way on the Ike Gauntlet, right? You must have some mental check marks where you go, oh, this truck did something that the last one didn't, or something like that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of doing things hundreds of times, we definitely ran Ike Gauntlet. What I think, well, we've published about 185 videos.
Nice.
But I think some of them have multiple trucks.
Right.
So, and it's maybe even more than that now. So
that'd be
literally
a great number to
hundreds,
sit down and figure out.
Hundreds of different vehicles. And speaking about slightly off-road testing as well, we keep going back to some of our favorite trails. And also we got lucky about two and a half years ago, we got some property as well, Tumbleweed Ranch, which is about, 20 acres. So we actually have created a couple of obstacles of our own, kind of man-made stuff, and we do have that creek in the back as well. But I totally get what you're saying because, and especially in water, I was going to bring it up because as soon as you introduce either snow or water, it masks a lot of obstacles, right? Right below it, right?
Sure.
So, if you were there for the first time, like if I actually was able to join you on one of those runs on the hydro line, I would probably be going very, very slowly because I'm scared about, is there going to be a rock here, or
Right.
something like this? So definitely, I see what you're saying because it's good to come back to the same test over and over and over again because it's standardized. And I know off-roading is not super standardized, right? Because it changes, right? I
It
mean,
is a little different every time, sure.
I mean, the rock moves every time you touch it. So it's really a unique experience almost every time. But there's those obstacles like on our Ironclads trail that we go up to that you've been there before.
Right.
There's like the steps, there's the Razor Rock. Those obstacles are slightly different, but the main features are still there
Right.
every single time.
Right, and that's it. And then you get that context. So you get in one vehicle and right away you kind of judge it, next to the other ones you've been on those obstacles with. And it's also, I think it's a good thing talking about truck testing to always bring up, which is the fine line we have to walk between I can't go out there and just break everything I get, so I have to have some mechanical sympathy, but I also need to test it properly and not under tested and then claim it was a tough off-road test. So that's always on my mind too. And that's also another thing where you run the same trail over and over because the familiarity means I pretty much know I'm not going to break something. Hey, stuff happens. I've broken stuff up the hydro line for sure, but I for the most part know it's going to be just hard enough, but not too hard. And you got to find that balance too, right?
Yeah, and I think you bring up an interesting point because both of us, we make a living on YouTube primarily, and that image, right, the featured image, the thumbnail is really important, and the more difficult it looks, potentially the cooler it can be, right, and
Sure.
the more viewers you can get. But like you said, what if you get too deep?
Yeah,
Right,
exactly.
so you do have to walk a fine line there because you want to bury it to the axles, or you want to go through some water where it kind of is halfway up your grill or whatever. But how far is too far?
Right.
Because a lot of
Right.
these vehicles we don't own, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's the classic thing with water too, which is that everyone thinks about where does the engine breathe them. Well, there's a lot of things that need to breathe properly. And so you don't want to go too deep and, sink the differentials and who knows what else. So it is always, yeah, there's that fine line we have to walk too, which once again, that's why I like having my own trails. I'm sure you guys talked to me a little bit more about the ranch and what you guys have built there, because that was sort of familiar to me going, you come to a piece of property, you have to identify where the cool off-road trails and obstacles can be, but then you guys had to do a lot of work to make those happen, right?
And a piece of land that Roman was able to purchase, it kind of butts up against this Front Range in the mountains, right? So it's right at the front range, and so it does have some natural elevation changes.
Nice.
And there's also kind of a, I don't know, not an official creek, I would say, but kind of a seepage coming off another creek and a ditch, a city area there, where there is a little bit of water. So.
Nice.
And of course, whenever there's water, first of all, it cuts a path, right? So it's cutting its own path. And also, it makes things more challenging
Yep.
as you kind of go through it. So we've created a couple of areas. We have something that Roman affectionately called Andre's Pit, which is kind of this downhill area. And there is also some kind of almost, you've been to Cinders Park in Arizona. Near Flagstaff, right?
I think so,
Cinders,
yeah.
it's kind of like this volcanic looking thing. It's like a really small, kind of dark looking rocks, almost like ash, like
Right.
old ash. So we have a tiny bit of that, tiny area of that terrain. We call it Lava Lane.
That's
So
cool.
we and then we actually work with our friend David, who is a great handyman, just an incredible architect, and he has many talents, but he helped us move some rock. We moved old telephone poles. where that we buried actually in the ground halfway, so half of a telephone pole would be sticking out. So
Nice.
we wanted to create, because we've been to these events with Jeep and Land Rover, right, where they build their own courses,
Totally.
and they're very skillful. You know, they're very skilled at that. So we
Right.
wanted to kind of approximate. It's very difficult, to, obviously, really costly sometimes to build something like this. But
Sure.
we also built a couple of what we call trenches, which is kind of like these elephant steps, which are offset holes where, you know, you can articulate through and you kind of go through that area. And then we have the Onyx Off-Road, which is one of our partners, back course with our. And I don't think you've have you run there? Have you
I've
been
not,
there?
no, I've never been to the ranch at all, I don't think.
Oh geez, you know, we have to fix that sometime in the future, in the
Yeah, one of these
near
days, I'd
future.
love to
But
come down and check it out.
and also our back course, so it snowed. We haven't had a lot of moisture this year so far. This is December 2025. But it snowed a couple of days ago, several days ago. And then we kind of have to close that back area because it freezes over, and now you have like a 30-degree slope with ice on it, and that's not passable.
And there, that's those the kind of things you have to identify and be like, that's just too hard. It doesn't matter what kind of vehicle I take up there. It's not going to happen, and I'm going to break something.
Yeah. But tell me about your property, because you not just the Hydroline, right? But you've also created your own little trail, I guess, through it.
Yeah, so we've cut a whole bunch of different trails. We have Hydroline, then we have the Left Hook, and then our newest trail is called Uppercut. We're going with the boxing theme. And yeah, Uppercut, it's sort of through the nastiest part of kind of the swamp that's on our property. And right now it's still a little too tight. We want to get in there and make it wider. However, I recently had a Wrangler, Wrangler Sport S, so a base Wrangler, just open diffs, two-door manual. So it was so fun. And that thing fit in there really well. So I took a Rebel in there once, and I took Big Green in there, but I need to get in there and cut some more trees because we didn't make it wide enough. You know, when you're cutting a trail and doing all the work, you're going, it's wide enough. That tree's fine. And then when you get in there with a big wide truck, you're going, oh my gosh, it's not wide enough. So yeah, we got to get back there. But I got to tell you, running that two-door Wrangler, man, it felt like a little side-by-side coming through there. Like the wheelbase is actually a lot shorter than most of the side-by-sides we test these days. And I'm in a lot of side-by-sides too. So that was sort of kind of on my mind the whole time going, this thing feels like a little cute side-by-side, and yet it's a road-going vehicle where the roof comes off. So it was fun. And open diffs. And I expected it to struggle in some spots, and it didn't matter. It just scampered right through. And sometimes I also think lightweight, right? Because it's so light, it just kind of floats over everything. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
That was the red Jeep you're talking about, right?
It was a red Wrangler Sport S, yeah, and it did
Yeah.
have basically the only upgrade is they added all-terrain tires, Nexen all-terrains, and outside of that, it was yeah, basically bone stock.
I love that. So, you brought up a couple points. Lightweight, small size. It's really hard to beat because, you know, some of the new vehicles, especially electric pickup trucks and big
Oh yeah.
SUVs, you know, some of the GM vehicles are pretty amazing, but they weigh 9,000 pounds.
Totally.
And you could definitely tell a difference between, you know, a 3,500 pound little Jeep with solid axles
Yeah.
versus a 9,000 pound, you know, tech laden machine.
100%. Yeah, when we drove the GMC Sierra EV AT4 for the first time, it was pretty muddy that day. And it was kind of like a twisty, windy course through some farm fields. You were probably on that event too. It was in Michigan. And I just remember like it was so muddy and it just pushed through every corner. Like it didn't matter what you did. If you had any speed and momentum and you steered, the truck's like, no, I'm not turning because I weigh 9,000 pounds and I want to continue to go straight. So yeah, it is a stark difference when you get used to testing that big heavy stuff, and then you get in that little tiny lightweight Wrangler. And then actually another vehicle we did have on the Hydroline this year was the Rivian R1S. So that was early in the year. It was springtime. It was just after the ice. I thought maybe it was going to be an ice video, but the ice was already all gone. but the water was deep, probably the deepest it's been in like recent memory. And the thing I'll never forget about the Rivian is, as you know, most EVs in the Rivian too, it's super sealed up underneath. You know, it basically looks like a boat hull. And that's exactly what it sounded like going through the hydro line with just slapping against the waves. It sounded like my little aluminum boat does when I'm out with the little outboard on
it.
And yeah, the sound was just wild to me how much it sounded like this big boat hull, you know, slapping against the water. And it did, the Rivian feels kind of heavy, not quite as egregious as those GMs. But it was also really impressive, man, for a vehicle that's that, again, quiet and comfortable and so cool. Like, it has all those fun little quirks. And then the interior is so nice. And then you take it off road. And yeah, I was really impressed with it. I don't know what you guys think, but
yeah. So just last week we had the R1S quad. This was the quad motor, the second gen. So this was the most recent Rivian, and it has adjustable air suspension, right? So height. So I kind of jacked it up. I kind of, you know, got the suspension a little bit extended, and I kind of laid down here in our studio, just laid down kind of on the floor, and I was looking up at the belly of the Rivian. And like you said, it's amazing what electric vehicles can do, right? Because the battery is all kind of one piece. It's almost like this one piece kind of a pan. And then the suspension is also kind of hidden, right? So the suspension is independent. And then the motors are protected with another kind of a, I mean, I guess you could call it skid plates, right? Because you have to protect all of that stuff.
Right.
And on the back of the new quad, there's a small, tiny pumpkin. It's not a pumpkin.
Really?
It's just a little skid plate that goes around the electric motors in the back.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
But it looks, it's like a little lower area, but it's only about an inch or two, right? So it's not something that hangs down, you know, a great ways. And I was thinking to myself, right, you jack this thing up. They say, Rivian says, what, almost 14 inches of ground clearance.
Right.
Right. But there's also no obstacles.
Yeah, nothing hanging down.
No, there's no shocks hanging down. There is no, you know, axle bolts hanging down. That's kind of very smart, really good. But then the next question comes, because everybody assumed, especially, for example, on that Sierra program, I was talking to some other journalists, and they were saying, well, when you have multiple motors, that means perfect control, right? I'm like, wait a minute, but it depends on the software, right?
Sure.
I mean, if you can get those electric motors, because the trouble is moving slowly, right? They're really great at putting down 1,000 horsepower, you know, at the drag strip. That's really amazing. But in order to start moving slowly, it's not as easy as that may sound.
Yeah, no, that is fair. And it can feel like that too, again. And just because the powers are so ridiculous, you have a tendency to put your foot a little deep into it and it wants to take off on you. And sometimes in the mud, that's no good.
Exactly. And also, I don't know which generation Rivian you were in, but this latest one I was in, they have a separate screen. It's called the RAD Tuner, R-A-D Tuner.
Yeah.
And it's actually like 10 or I think it's 10 different parameters that you could, there's like slider buttons and you could adjust them separately, like distribution of front to rear torque.
That's cool.
Also how much regen you can have or not have. And I was and actually it did something, you know, usually when you have some modes, I want to ask you about this. For example, Ford is kind of good at this, right? Adding like 7 or 8 different drive modes, but are they actually doing something, right? And this RAD tuner on this Rivian, cause I didn't want regen coming down an icy slope, because those electric motors are trying to like generate energy, and I didn't kind of want that. So, and I was able to decrease that level, and actually was actually a better experience. So what do you think about these new modes that everybody has?
Well, I do think EVs offer, you know, a distinct advantage. And yeah, being able to control that power output and probably more easily able to control, you know, I assume those things, and I know those things are possible with the gas engine because you can still get into the ECU. But there's no doubt that there's more involved there than it is with an EV. And I think, again, EVs, you know, they need all the help they can get to sell. And that's a cool selling feature. That's like, hey, you can customize this thing way more than you've ever been used to in the past, right? You can really get in and tell me where to send the power, how to split the power, how much power to put down. Because that's another thing, too. I always go, it's great that all our EVs now make 600, 700, 800 horsepower. But why not give me a 200 horsepower EV that gets way more range? And I know that's a function of how you drive as well, but like, doesn't that make sense? So if I want to limit myself, I take the horsepower slider and just bring it all the way down, and then the range starts to go back up. And how cool is that, right? So I think EVs specifically offer that kind of advantage. And then with drive modes in general, I do think they matter. I do think they make a difference. Is it a massive difference? Not really. And I think more than anything, the thing I fear is that these days we're getting to a point where automakers want everything to be automatic, right? They don't want you to understand how four-wheel drive works, how a transfer case works, how PTU works, any of these things. They just want you to know, oh, it's snowing, I'll put it in snow mode. Oh, I'm driving in the sand, I'll put it in sand mode. And I get the appeal of that. But I think you have to understand what that mode is doing to then optimize your driving for that mode. So I've never seen it as just as simple as hit the button and now the car is perfect. It's like, no, I want to know. And the one brand I'll call out as doing this the best, I think, is Land Rover. Land Rover, when you put it into snow mode, a little paragraph comes up and specifically says, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to have the shift points here. We're going to not spin the tires, or we will spin the tires. And I think that's so important, is to give the customers the modes, but then explain in detail what your thinking was. Because if I'm thinking like the engineer, then I can drive to optimize the mode. And so I guess that's my kind of takeaway from drive modes. If you have no clue what it's doing, it's going to help you a little bit, but not a ton. Because, yeah, you're not changing the way you're driving to suit the mode, too. So, yeah, there's definitely, I always feel like more education is better, and drive modes are taking us away from more education. They're trying to just dumb it down, where I think you need to understand what's actually going on under the hood. And I guess the other one I'll call out, which I think is funny, is the Frontier, right? For 2026, the Nissan Frontier added drive modes. And I was like, oh, great. First of all, you're a decade late. Second of all, now it just feels like it's expected, right? A customer test drive all the midsize trucks, he's going to get in the Nissan and go, hey, why don't you have drive modes? Does that really matter? Does it make it a better truck? A little bit, but it feels these days like everyone just has to have it now, you know?
Yeah, totally. Funny enough, I guess we're kind of testing the same vehicles almost at the same time, right? Because that's what's available, right? Those are the new vehicles that are actually coming out. And I just saw the Frontier drive mode button. It's I don't know, there's like four or five of them, right? In this little section. And what I would say about it is I want to bring up Ford, because I think Ford was one of the earlier ones with the Raptor trucks that really put kind of drive modes on the map, I think. But not just drive modes, but multiple drive modes, right? Because they have the rock and the slippery and the sand and the Baja, right? And the other thing that some of these vehicles do is, and Case and I, and often Roman and I talk about this as well, is the truck or the SUV is trying to think for me, and also it thinks it's better than me. Which is I kind of echo what you said. Maybe it's offering that to more people now, right? Because a lot of people maybe didn't have the education. Maybe they didn't grow up on a ranch or a piece of property where you could go out and experience all these different modes, on road and then off road as well. So maybe it's offering a wider audience and access to this. But at the same time, like for example, I would put the truck in four low, right? And this happens on a Ford a lot of the times. And it usually has a locking differential if it's equipped with four low. And it will, or even better, I put it in rock crawl mode. It automatically tells me I want to be in four low. Okay, that's okay. And then it automatically locks my differential or multiple differentials. I'm like, okay, but I need to make a tight turn. So I don't need my locker on right now. You know what I'm saying? So the truck is trying to think for me, which is good, I guess, but it's also, let the driver think for themselves.
Right. And it's funny, I have an example exactly of that one too. At the Raptor Rally, there was a little rock crawl, and exactly, they're like, everyone, hey, put your Raptors in rock crawl mode. But then specifically told us, but unlock the rear differential. You don't want to be locked for this. And that was it. I'm like, so it's like the rock mode locks it. And then you have to realize that it's locked and know what that means, what a locker does, and that you actually prefer to be unlocked because it was the same thing. There was a bit of a turn, and it was just not that technical. So it was easier to do it unlocked. So once again, like, yes, I'm all for drive modes, but with the proper education to kind of go with them. And sadly, they kind of inherently don't lead to more education, they lead to less.
Yeah, so it's interesting then. I guess, that's kind of good for you and I because we can make videos about it, right? We
That's
can
fair.
talk about it and we can make podcasts about it too. So
Yeah, that is fair. And if I can bring up one more gripe while we're on drive modes, I'm sick of Baja mode. Can we come up with another name? Like, I love Baja. Baja Racing's incredible, but I don't know, man. I just feel like every brand has leaned in a little too hard on Baja mode. They should call it like Flying Eagle mode or, I don't know.
Freedom,
Yeah,
freedom.
Freedom mode. I'm okay with Freedom mode. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like Baja mode is a little played out.
Steven, here's how you know you've made it. When there's a manufacturer has a hydroline mode,
Yes.
that's when
That's what we're working on.
you did it. You did it right. No, you know what? So going back to Rivian just for a second. So they do have this tuner. They call this the tuner of the motor control and capability. And then you could save that as its own mode.
Oh, yeah.
So
It makes
yeah,
sense.
so that's the ultimate. That's how you can define your own hydroline mode. And you can actually say, I selected this power distribution. This was, the suspension mode. This was the stability mode. And you could actually save that, and some other people can say, "Hey, Steven told me to do this," and bam, I'm on the hydroline.
Sure. That'd be super cool. And I don't know if it's a possibility yet, but it seems like an obvious next step that then you could share your modes directly with your friends in the same vehicle, right? Send it over the air and download that mode and you're away to the races. And that's the exciting thing, I think, about EVs and over the air updates. Like I Rivian already was, I believe, the brand that added a snow mode after the fact. And I think even the camping mode, maybe they added. And that's cool. Like they can come in after you buy your vehicle and say, hey, we've come up with this new drive mode. Just download it, right? That is an exciting, I think, future for automotive. A little scary, and there's some downsides too, but also pretty cool.
Yeah, the camping mode, sell auto levels, right?
Right.
The whole vehicle on, if you want to park and camp out, it kind of auto levels itself.
Right. I think it's quiet too, right? It disables the sound and maybe even tilts the headlamps down. Like it's got a bunch of little things it does to make sure you're not disturbing your neighbors.
Yeah, totally. It's really interesting. I wanted to ask you a little bit about towing, right?
Sure.
I know you have kind of several trailers or maybe a couple different weights that you guys are using. Oh, and I saw recently you did, well, maybe this year you did also kind of a camper. You pulled a camper with a couple of trucks as well.
Right. Yes. So we do a couple different things when towing. Just like you guys, we do our best to tow as much as we can. Actually, again, if you just want to talk about truck testing for a second behind the scenes, here in Ontario, we've been getting crazy winter, man. The last 2 weeks, like this morning, it was minus 18 when I woke up, so it's frigid cold.
Whoa.
And I probably have snowbanks outside my house that are already 5 feet tall. So winter came in full force early this year. And our trailer up north, it's snowed in. So sadly, our one flat deck trailer, we're not getting to it again, maybe until January or sorry, until springtime. And that's just one of the tough things with filming towing videos is winter makes it way harder. And then dealing with towing in the winter, we do it. I know I absolutely can handle it, but it's a pain in the butt. You know yourself, dealing with chains when it's cold and they're all slushy and gross. And so yes, winter adds an added challenge to the towing side of things. things. But that's one of the reasons we try to keep our options open. So we have flat deck trailers and we have big concrete weights. So we you know, adjust the concrete weights as necessary to whatever the trucks are. We usually do 7,000 on half tons, 5,000 on mid-sizers, and then sometimes 10,000 on heavy duties. Although with heavy duties, my dad has a fifth wheel. So we hook this fifth wheel up a lot. He has a grand design. It's 15,000 pounds, I think, 17 GVWR, something like that. So it's you know, fair size fifth wheel. So that's been a great test for a couple trucks. And then we also have some relationships with a couple local RV dealers. So I think the video you're referencing is we went and visited our friends at K&M RV in London, Ontario, and they hooked us up with an Airstream, identical Airstream to actually, and we did a Silverado EV and a Cybertruck with identical Airstreams on the exact same loop so we could, you know, test efficiency and all that stuff. And that's when it does pay to have, you know, good relationships too, because it's hard to source two identical Airstream trailers, right? So we were very thankful for Andy and his team, and he hooked us up. The Cybertruck was privately owned. Again, as you guys know, Tesla doesn't do media, but that was an owner who, so we actually did a video going back to 2022, I believe, where Andy, the owner of that dealership, he tows an Airstream with his Model S. And then he built a custom hitch for a Model 3 and he tows an Airstream. So we did a video on his Model 3. This Tesla owner watched our video, called Andy and said, hey, I'm getting a Cybertruck and I'd love to buy an Airstream from you. So we kind of facilitated the whole thing. So then Andy reached out to him and said, hey, remember that video you watched? Those guys were curious if they could, you know, get your truck for a test. So it all worked out. And we were very thankful for that owner who helped us out that day. And what a cool test, man. First of all, that was my first time in a Cybertruck. So that was obviously just exciting to be able to actually sit in it, see what it's like. I know you have lots of experience, so I'll be curious to hear your thoughts. But the craziest thing about that truck is the steering, right? Is the way it steers is so different. It turns so tight for the size of it. The fact that the steering is just, you know, everything's basically right here. Like it just turns so quickly. And it takes a minute to get used to. Like it's a little too twitchy, I found at first. But once you kind of calibrate your hands, I really liked it. Like the way it steers is super cool. And then the four-wheel steering as well just means it turns that much tighter. Although I will say that the Silverado EV turns slightly tighter because we did that test. We hooked them up and turned them. And the Silverado EV was like, I think a foot and a half, something like that, tighter than the Tesla was. But yeah, it was cool, man. It was really neat to drive that truck. I still don't like the way it looks. Sitting inside it is weird. You know, the raked windshield is just super weird up over your head.
Yeah.
It's also really expensive in Canada. Granted, both of those trucks are, but the Cybertruck in our test was 150 grand, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a cool test. It was great to have that opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah, totally. That's a bummer that you snowed in with your trailer already.
Yeah, and the off-road trails too, you know, like I like going off-roading in the snow, but again, it's finding that balance of enough snow that it's tough, but not too much snow because I don't care what the vehicle is. It will get stuck if there's enough snow. You know, we've proven that on our channel a bunch of times because, as you know, the commenters can be harsh sometimes and say, you know, my Honda Civic would have made it through that. So we took a Power Wagon and got it miserably stuck in the snow. We took a Yukon AT4, a ZR2. We've gotten many vehicles stuck in the snow. And that's always the point is I don't care what it is. If there's enough snow and ice, nothing is getting through unless it's a snowmobile, maybe a Sherp.
Yeah. Yeah, we did have actually a Sherp at our ranch, what is it, maybe in February or so.
Nice.
And it was amazing. That's, you know, when you decrease those giant tire pressures, you know, the tires are what, 5 or 6 feet tall?
Yeah.
And they're really wide. When you decrease their pressure to like, what, 5 PSI or 10 PSI, it just, oh, they told me, you know, but he's like, it can run you over without damaging your body. I'm like, I'm not testing that.
I bet Roman wanted to.
Probably Roman wanted to. But he's like, you could also put, like, if you're on a hard ground, when the Sherp is air down, you could put like a can of Coke or something.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to like go over it without squishing the can.
It's crazy, man. Can I say, here's my controversial take on the Sherp, is that it's almost too good. Like it's still really fun, but it's not quite as fun as like getting through an obstacle in an old beat up Jeep is, because it's so good. And of course, for people in the mining exploration world or extreme adventure, it's second to none, right? It's so good. And there's a whole bunch of other vehicles now in that kind of category, but that's my one take, is like sometimes you're in it going, yeah, where's the challenge? It's too dang good.
Yeah, and exactly. And on top of that, when the vehicle is too dang good, it looks boring on video.
It does. That's fair.
Yeah.
Totally. Because it
yeah,
makes
because...
everything look so easy. And when you're in the vehicle, you're going, no, this is ridiculous. Nothing else could do this, but it makes it look easy because it's so good.
Yeah. And everybody's saying, why are you showing us this? So anyway, so that's a tough one.
Yeah, that is. But yes, if you ever get a chance to go in one, do it, because it's so fun. You're just looking at everything going, it can't go over that. And then it just goes over it like it's nothing. What a crazy, crazy vehicle.
And then, and the guys who brought it out, it was like basically a local dealership for the Sherp.
Yeah.
They're like, if you go slowly, you can do anything. I'm like, okay, I mean, that's fair. But they really meant it, right? Because it's also amphibious, right? It also
Right.
floats. Anyway, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But a comment on the Cybertruck, I guess, really quick.
Sure. Yeah.
I was really impressed, because we owned one for several months.
Right.
I was really impressed with the technology that they were able to kind of package inside of it. Like you were saying, really quick steering and just the power delivery and kind of the suspension comfort.
Yeah.
I thought they really dialed it in. Quite an impressive way. I didn't like the yoke style steering wheel, because maybe I'm just older and I'm just used to a circle,
Sure.
because I was talking to a dude, I play volleyball recreationally, and there's this guy with a Cybertruck at our volleyball league, and he was telling me, how he loved this the yoke, right? Because you don't have to move it very far. It's about 90
Right.
degrees or so, and you can actually steer really, really well. But I'm like, well, but what about doing hand over hand? It's weird, right? You can't really move your
Totally.
hands around.
Totally.
So anyway, so it was a big disagreement. We were kind of talking about this. But the way that the Cybertruck is shaped, I know they were maybe trying to go for a splash, being very kind of out there, being controversial.
Of course.
But I think if the Cybertruck actually looked like an F-150, I think it could have been really, or maybe even more successful, I would say.
Yeah, or honestly, a Model X, right? Like, what if they just made a Model X pickup truck? If you picture that in your head, I can see that too. Because I think that's one of Tesla's, one of their strongest, points is their design. If you think about it, they haven't really significantly changed their design since it launched.
Yes.
But those cars still look really good, in my opinion. So
yeah,
I do agree with you there. And that's it, man. I don't care who you are. Some people will never be able to get over that design. Like I could have loved everything about that truck, but I won't buy it or drive it because of the way it looks. So it's just polarizing. And maybe they'll realize that. Maybe they never intended it to be for a wide audience. And if that's the case, then that's fine. But
exactly. And also, I mean, yes, one of it is a kind of a personal taste, but also the bed is hard to reach in,
it is.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's some functional, definitely some functional areas which are kind of difficult with
Sure.
it.
Did you ever do a payload test with your Cybertruck? I'm just curious, because that's the other thing it's very impressive at, is its payload numbers. And I was just wondering how it would feel.
I actually did a payload test with it right before we bought one. I was out with an owner who was one of the first people to get one in California. And he actually had a forklift with a pallet worth of stuff, and it was quite impressive. What is it, like 2,000 pounds? I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, or maybe over 2,000 pounds.
I think it's 2,500. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially the original ones. And it also levels itself out.
Right.
I mean, it's quite impressive about what they can do.
Yeah, that is cool. That is cool. And you know this too. That's almost like the dirty secret of electric trucks, is that they're all categorized, as class 2B, so heavy duty trucks basically. And that's one of the reasons it has such a high payload. So that's why in my head I'm like, did they just do it to hit the marks, or did they really properly, engineer it? So I'm happy to hear it's good.
Yeah. And also, my complaint, I guess, would be against some of the GM and some of the maybe a Ford electric vehicle pickup truck, the Lightning, and some of the GMs, is that they're heavier vehicles, right? But oftentimes that doesn't come with a lot of payload,
Right.
right? The original Silverado EV, because they kind of, I think there's a classification where they had to stay under 10,000
Under 10,000, yeah.
GVW,
Right.
that meant it had like 1,300 pounds of payload. I'm like, no.
Right. Right.
Get it over that,
Yeah.
get it above it, and actually give it some real payload where you can put, four big guys in there and carry a bunch of weight, or a trailer behind you as well. So,
Yeah, totally agree.
my other complaint would be with Toyota, I think. There's some of the recent Tacomas and like 4Runners, they don't have enough payload, right?
Yeah.
They're really adventurous vehicles,
Yeah.
really cool vehicles, but like I was just looking at your 4Runner towing review. I think it has like 900 pounds of payload or something like that.
For sure. And that towing review's on a limited, but what's even worse is the Trail Hunter, man. 4Runner Trail Hunter is less than 1,000 pounds. And it's like you're pitching me as this crazy adventure vehicle, and yet I can't even put 1,000 pounds in here, you know? And then if you want me to put a rooftop tent on, I mean, a cooler in the back, and maybe you and the dog, and that's it, right? And now there's a whole other conversation about, you know, whether you should overload it or not. And we all know that most people do overload it, but it's also like, yeah, that is overloaded according to their spec. And it sucks that so many people have to feel like they're overloading their vehicles, you know?
You know what I've been told by several, I guess, fans who watch some of our stuff is
Yeah.
they're like, I just bought a pickup truck. It has as much payload as I say it does.
Yeah,
You know?
fair enough, man. And that's it. Like, you know yourself, you show the door jam sticker and all your videos to show the payload. So many people go, What sticker is that? I've never seen that sticker before in my life. And that's actually a real pain point. And I feel bad for customers on this because manufacturers are a little bit tricky. They love to advertise that high top payload number, but the top payload number is for a base truck with two-wheel drive, not a loaded up luxury truck, right? So when you actually get it in the real world, those payloads really suffer and they can be pretty low, and it is depressing. The Ram 1500 too, man. When the Hemi came back, I don't know if you noticed, but every truck I looked at with that new Hemi, the payloads were terrible. We found one under 900 pounds, which
Oh
for a
yeah,
half
some
ton
of the
truck.
luxury ones, right?
It was a fully, it was luxury. It had the split tailgate, Hemi. They added the screen, right? Passenger side touch screen and powered steps and every single option. And yeah, had less than 900 pounds. So that sucks. That hurts.
I guess I don't know. Maybe we should go there a little bit because it's like at that level, your pickup truck is really just a sedan, right? Because and maybe that's what they want. Maybe that customer, and I want to hear what you think about this, is like when you're buying that limited Ram 1500, right? And it's got 22s on it. It's rolling on 22s, and it's got massaging seats and this and that. And I don't know if that customer, if it matters to them that they cannot actually haul anything in that
Yeah,
truck.
probably not. And then honestly, I already said this, but like most people will never know what their payload is, and it's probably fine. Because if someone said to me, I just bought a new Ram Limited and I'm going to take my family on a camping trip, I'm like, yeah, go ahead. You're going to feel fine with that truck. You know what I mean? I'm not talking about towing, I'm just talking about loading it up. Or same thing, if you said, hey, I have 1,000 pounds of payload, I'd be like, yes, 1,000 pounds of payload can go in the bed of any half ton. That's just what my mind says. And we both know that that truck's going to feel fine with that weight. And what really makes me mad is those payload numbers are such they're a mixture between engineering, marketing, and government regulations and lawyers. So like all of these people come in to get in on that number. And I just wish we could have a more honest conversation about those payload numbers, because I never want to be seen as the guy going, yeah, overload your vehicles. It doesn't matter. It does matter. You can clearly overload your vehicle to a very unsafe point. And I don't want to be advocating for that either. And every time we talk to engineers, they don't want to ever put numbers on it. I would love one of them to say, yes, you know, 15% over payload is where that real maximum is. But that's why the whole conversation is kind of frustrating from that point of view. I'll share one other tidbit, which is that I actually reached out to the Ontario Provincial Police, and I had a good conversation with a representative from the OPP. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but what he basically told me is that he's almost never going to pull someone over because he's worried they're overweight. He's going to pull you over because your bumper's dragging on the ground, or the fender's falling off your trailer, or your lights aren't working, or there's almost always another symptom of like that surrounded with being overloaded that they're mm-hmm. going to pull you over for. He's like, I'm not looking at that, because he's like, yeah, every travel trailer, every truck with a big travel trailer, it's probably over its payload a little bit. But if it's cruising down the road at highway speed with a nice level flat attitude, they're not ever going to pull you over and weigh that trailer and try to figure that out. So he was saying the same thing. He's like, clearly overloaded vehicles are a problem on the road, but you have to use your own judgment, man. If it feels safe and it looks safe, no one's going to bug you about it. So, that's where these conversations are nuanced. There's a lot of gray area, even from the kind of police perspective. They're not going to pull you over and give you a ticket for being 10 pounds over payload. That's just not going to happen. I've never heard of that happening. 1,000 pounds over payload? Yeah, maybe. 5,000 pounds over payload, you shouldn't be driving that vehicle. So again, it is nuanced, and I wish I could even offer more info, but we're always talking about payload on our channel, man. We talk about this so much.
Yeah, and just to continue on that just a little bit more, sure. I would view it this way. So when you were talking about kind of overloading a little bit, one older vehicle came to mind. This was, I believe, like a 2018-ish F-150. Which we did a night gauntlet with, and I compared it to a Titan XD. And the Titan XD was a kind of a beefier vehicle, right? Bigger sure. frame. It was a little bit halfway up a class, right?
Right.
Which is what Nissan was doing. And we put the same trailer on both of them, and it was really maxing out the Ford, but the Nissan didn't, it wasn't maxing out the Nissan at that level. Mm-hmm. And the Ford was squatting, right? We were trying to use a weight distribution hitch, all the things, but it felt a little loosey-goosey, right? So it squatted. I think it was basically almost on bump stops at this point. And the suspension felt different. And it was noticeable. You know, it was like, and also you have to watch tire pressures as well, right?
Sure.
So if you're a little bit underinflated because you're running around getting groceries, you know, tire pressure doesn't matter quite as much, but when you're at maximum weights, you know, the tire squishes also, and it becomes sure. a little bit more loose, and it moves side to side. And all of a sudden, now you're in a situation where the truck doesn't feel as comfortable or as stable as it once was. And then recently we did a four truck comparison, Ike, where we pushed them really heavy too. You may have seen that video already. And what surprised me, all those recent trucks, these are 2026 models and 2025 models, near the bump stop, they felt really comfortable and stable. So I don't know if manufacturers are kind of tweaking little things and making them even more and more stable and really comfortable. But here's my take on it. If, you know, if you're going, you know, I don't know, a shorter distance with a slightly overloaded vehicle and it looks level and everything is great, and then, God forbid, you get into an accident, and then they're going to start checking things, right? At that point, they'll say, oh, you're 1,000 pounds over. Okay, you got into an accident. Oh, okay. You know, so are you willing? So that's one thing in the back of my mind, right?
Sure.
Which is happens almost never, right? Really rare, but it could potentially happen. Also, braking could be affected, right? Your stopping power
sure.
Is definitely being affected by that. But like you said, I mean, eventually it is you're taking your own risk, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a scary thing to say because, yeah, everyone has to manage the risk for yourself, but you're managing it for others as well. Because at the end of the day, the smartest tool in the truck is the driver. It's the one behind the wheel. It's like you just said, realizing, oh, you know what? I'm a little heavy today. I need to leave a lot more distance in front of me. So, yeah. And that's the other part of this too, right? Which is that the numbers have to make sense. It has to feel safe, but then you have to drive according to the load as well. And so to your point, it's like if someone crashes overloaded, it's probably because they weren't compensating for that load properly. Exactly. And granted, I think we all appreciate, yeah, there's always emergency situations. And if there really is an emergency, you never want to be caught, yeah, overloaded or in something that feels extra sketchy. So I get that too, but there is some sort of personal responsibility sort of factored into this as well, as how you handle driving that load, you know?
Exactly. And then the final thing is, I think durability comes into mind.
Sure.
That's not something on most people's minds, right? Like, let's say you overloaded your F-150 for the next 5 years going
Right.
to work and back. That F-150 is going to be used up.
That's a fair point. And I think that is what I've heard manufacturers say to me before when I've pushed them on this, is they go, you know what, the number is really saying, if you're over this number all the time, something's going to wear out way earlier than you think it is, whether it's shocks or springs or whatever. So
yeah,
that's a fair point as well. And yeah, in that vein, then I circle all the way back to the 4Runner Trail Hunter with, you know, terrible payload and go, yeah, it's not enough. It's not enough to know that if I'm regularly camping with my 4Runner, I'm doing more damage to it than I should be, and I have to worry about premature failures, you know?
Yeah, because it goes all the way to, you know, the wheel bearings and the axle bearings, and it goes to every component, right?
Sure.
It really goes to, you know, your brakes wearing out, et cetera, et cetera. So when people ask me, you know, I'm hauling, you know, I'm a contractor, I'm hauling, lumber and all this stuff every day, should I get an F-150 or, you know, a Chevy 2500? I'm like, go for a 2500. I mean, it's gonna last you longer, you know. So yes, it comes maybe with a higher, you know, maintenance cost a little bit, because it may have a bigger engine or it may have a diesel, but in the long run, it'll just last you longer, you know, and you'll be safer.
Totally.
You'll be safer for the long haul.
Totally. And you know, we know this, heavy duty trucks, a lot more of that, you know, percentage of those trucks do hard work all the time, where half ton trucks, they're not really built for really hard work these days, or some of them. Obviously, you can get the base trucks and those trims are still out there, but so many of the trucks we test anyways are, yeah, man, they're family haulers with beds on the back, you know?
I hear you. What about, I was bummed because we were both at SEMA this year.
Yes.
But I did not run into you. So I
yes.
was kind of bummed about this. But what are you seeing as far as, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, maybe trends, or what was your SEMA experience like?
Sure. Well, the first thing I'll say is, just talking about auto shows, man, SEMA is alive and well. That show is crazy. So I did SEMA, I think I covered it 5 years in a row. Maybe like 2014 through 2019. And then I think starting the pandemic year, I hadn't been back. So it'd been a few years since I'd been there. So it, you know, it changed a bunch. There's that whole new hall. So my first initial takeaway was like, you know, I didn't go to the Detroit Auto Show last year, which was a crazy one for us. We've always done Detroit, but there's no point as a media member anymore. I know LA is still doing all right, but it feels like it's going the same way. New York feels less important. The other North American auto shows have totally gone the other direction, where SEMA is absolutely crazy, man. What a busy show. And I realize it's not the same type of show. It's a trade show. It's not just for, hey, come look at our new models. And it's not even a public show. Yeah, it's just for, you know, consumers in the trade. So I recognize it's not the same thing. But man, I was just happy to see how vibrant and alive it was down there.
It also kind of helps to, well, it helps and it doesn't help. It helps to spread it out across multiple buildings, because I remember, like you were talking, like 2014, where you're walking shoulder to shoulder, you know, with 5,000 other people, and you're
sure,
like, why am I here? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, from a media perspective, can be a tricky show to cover for that reason. It's so busy, right? We're pretty lucky where we go to other shows on a media day and we get a bit of space to work. Whereas that show, yeah, you're really in the thick of things with all the people out there, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun. I love seeing all the trucks. I'm trying to think what really stood out. I mean, probably what stood out to me the most, what stuck in my brain, is that little Maverick 300T, for the simple fact that they're actually going to build it or build some version of it. You know, it's SEMA's great to see the pie in the sky crazy stuff, but I love it when a brand says, "Hey, here's a, you know, turbocharged version of the Maverick of 300 horsepower, and we're going to do something like this. You're going to be able to get one," which was awesome. So it's fun to see stuff like that. And then for me, because it was such a crossover of my worlds and your worlds as well, was the Toyota side by side. Like, come on, that was crazy, man. I didn't have that on my bingo card that Toyota would build a side by side. But this is a whole other conversation we can get into if you want, which is side by sides are so expensive now that there's a legitimate crossover between should I buy this new, you know, whatever, Polaris Expedition, or should I buy a Toyota Tacoma? Like, those prices actually cross over, which is bonkers. So I think Toyota is sitting there going, wait a second, we can do that. I know how to, I make engines, I make chassis and suspensions, and I don't have to put airbags into it. Please sign me up for that. And I can sell it for how much? So to me, I think Toyota is just jumping on an opportunity. And I think, I honestly think it would be a slam dunk if they brought this thing out, because consumers, they know the Toyota brand. In side-by-sides, reliability is always the number one thing people are looking for. Same with trucks too, but like in side-by-sides, that's all anyone ever talks about. So Toyota's got the name, they've got the reputation, they've got the dealerships. I hope they do it, man. I want to see that thing.
Yeah, and also they named it interestingly Scion, which
Right.
what used to be a compact kind of affordable sporty car brand, and now it's kind of representing. Well, they didn't really say, "Hey, we're doing this." They showed the Scion side by side, and I think it was a they wanted the reaction from us,
Sure.
and I think they got a lot of positive reactions because it seemed to be a popular thing. You have a sport machine channel, right?
So we have a channel called TK Power Sports. So we do all power sports, side by sides, ATVs, PWCs, all that stuff.
So did it do well on that channel for you as well? Was it pretty good?
It did okay. I mean, I published after you guys, so once TFL's published, I mean, what's the point, right? But yeah, it did okay. And it definitely got, you know, just a lot of people going, same reaction I had, which was, oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is not something I saw coming. You know, I did not think a brand like Toyota, even maybe Ford, you know, a brand like that might do it, but Toyota of all brands. So I think the viewers on our side were just as surprised to see it too.
Yeah, I wonder what like GM and Ford and like Jeep are thinking, right?
Right.
They saw that and they're like, because it seems like you mentioned the Maverick. I just wanted to kind of come back to that really quick.
Sure.
Ford did the Maverick and almost nobody answered, right? I mean, Hyundai answered with the Santa Cruz, but it
Right.
wasn't quite as popular.
Sure.
But still, nobody else has a have answered that question,
Right.
and Ford is really successful with that. And the other thing I wanted to say about their kind of performance packages, a lot of them. So we've been contemplating this at TFL of whether we should supercharge our F-150 Tremor or not.
Nice.
And the supercharger is a Whipple. But it has a Ford Performance backing, right? So basically, you could do it at the dealership
Right, you got a
level.
warranty.
And similar thing with this Maverick, right? And they have Mustangs and other Broncos and other products where you could actually soup them up, but do it with some dealership backing. But I recently was talking to my friend Charlie from Houston, and he actually bought an F-150 supercharged. F-150, not a Raptor R, but just kind of a basic truck. And the gray area was the warranty, right? So originally he was told it was like 36 month, 3 year, 36,000 miles. But then they're like walking it back,
That's
walking
not
it back
fair.
to like 12 months of warranty. So right now there's a gray area that I need to follow up on because
Right.
I really want to ask Ford and also Whipple because Whipple is providing the parts, right? And then, the dealership technicians and then kind of Ford is backing it a little bit, right?
Yeah, and that's the biggest selling feature, I think, is the warranty, because obviously you can get stuff on the aftermarket at any time, right? But coming from, you know, from the dealership, so you trust the work, and then getting the warranty, so without that, it's a tougher sell.
And then they also announced, that F-150 Raptor R 900 horsepower package,
Right.
right? At the same show, at SEMA. And everything is, well, first of all, I'm really impressed, right, that Ford is actually willing to go. But now there's a little bit of doubt in my mind, because Charlie's having a really hard time with what they're telling him in Houston.
Right.
So I'm really hoping, Ford really stands up and says, you know what, we've checked a lot of these components. They're satisfied, whatever it needs to satisfy in order for us to back it for at least 3 years, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Which would be amazing, like you said, because you could do a suspension lowering kit or a lifting kit or any number of things aftermarket anytime. But in order to be, properly engineered, right, and also backed,
Right, that's the selling point.
that's a really huge point. And I'm really quite impressed because, I mean, GM has great engine programs, and Stellantis Mopar does as well, but it seems like Ford is taking it to the next level, right?
Right.
Okay, it's not just a great engine, but you could also get, some modification done at the dealership, which is really, really cool, I think.
For sure. And the one, so we tested an FP700 on the channel in 2022, I want to say, maybe 23, which is the 700 horsepower F-150. It was a little, I can't remember if it was a red cab, but it was a short wheelbase truck.
Probably, yeah.
And it was funny because the suspension was done, the engine was crazy, but they don't do anything to the steering. And that was like the one weird thing in that truck is like everything feels sporty and aggressive, except the steering feels like a regular F-150. So I don't know if that's changed or if they do anything. That was the only weird thing to me. I remember driving going like, that was the one part of this package that I feel like you guys missed on, was not making the steering a little quicker, telling me it's a performance version. But outside of that, I mean, 700 horsepower straight to the rear wheels is incredible.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what they were talking about with the Lobo packages,
Right.
right? On some of their Mavericks and F-150s, is that it's supposed to be a holistic package,
It's
right?
more, yeah.
Like the Maverick Lobo, they talked about quicker steering ratios, they talked about different brakes, they
Right.
talked about, they thought about all those things, not just, oh, let's lower it or whatever, and just have it the same. But
Totally. And the Lobo's fun. I like the Lobo, man. I was really impressed with it. And I think most people had the same reaction that I did, which was actually like, oh, you did everything but the power plant. It would have been nice to get that power too, right? Like the handling's good, the steering's fun, but a little more power would have been cool. Because yeah, it's like knowing that that's a brand that used to have, say, like a Focus RS on the road. It's like it's not anywhere near the level of a Focus RS, but maybe it could be with a nice power bump and, a little more tuning. So I'm happy to see them doing that. And it's also fun to have a fun street truck on the road, man. Not everything has to be off-road capable. Let's get some trucks that are fun to go around corners in,
Yeah, and I think maybe we can kind of close our conversation by talking about, I was just seeing, you also did a story about the Ram, the Dude concept, which was the 1500 Dude,
Sure.
which is also kind of a slightly lowered Ram 1500
Right.
with a Hemi engine. I mean, it's got a V8, it's got a lower stance, it's got some body kit on it. And I'm wondering, they didn't say they're going to sell the Dude, by the way, at least straight up like this. I'm wondering if there's another trend coming where, like, the Lobos and then the Dudes and also maybe the SS. Hey, where
Right.
is the Chevy SS pickup truck?
Right. Yeah, that would be cool, right? It does feel like we're getting back there, or give us a Tacoma X Runner, right? Those were cool trucks, man. And yeah, obviously we both love the off-road trucks, so I do not want to see them go anywhere, but we have so much choice now with off-road trucks that it feels like maybe they're sitting around going, we've kind of pushed this to as far as we can push it. What else can we do, right? So let's swing back into the, street trucks that we used to have. And of course, Ram, you know, had the king of them all, the SRT10, which is, you know, ridiculous Viper powered Ram that, yeah, made no sense, right? And I've never driven one, so maybe you can add insight if you have, but that truck apparently wasn't good handling. It didn't go around corners very well, but it didn't matter because it was a Viper V10 in a Ram. So I want to see the brands have fun like that again. And if there's any brand that's going to do stuff like that, it is Stellantis, right? Like they're the kings of the special edition. If you look at any of those brands, Jeep, Dodge, right? They love their cool special editions, and they just like having fun. So yeah, we'll have to see. And maybe we could even tease that, you know, we know the TRX is coming back, and we think maybe we're going to find out more about that hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Exactly. And there's a lot of rumors swirling around related to the TRX, which is maybe in another version of a Ram, maybe street capable, you know, maybe street oriented, maybe a lowered version with a big engine as well.
That would be cool.
So there's a lot of rumors swirling around, but we can't confirm right now. So So that could be very interesting as well.
And to roll them out together, that would make a splash, man, because we all know the TRX is, and I say coming back, as I know the RHO has kind of been the placeholder, but coming back with a V8. But how cool would it be to have that truck sitting next to a lowered Ram right there, right, with the same engine and ready to go fast? That would be cool. And Ram's going back to NASCAR. So like they've kind of got that cool NASCAR design truck out there now. They could borrow some stuff from that. So
yeah, and they have fun. Going back to NASCAR, you know, it gives them a little opportunity to like advertise more, right? So maybe there is something there. And you know what? We love the Hellcat, obviously. We just recently had a Durango Hellcat here as well, which is, you would think it's a 15-year-old chassis with a, what is it, a 7-year-old engine or 8-year-old engine, but it's still so good.
Nice.
It's still so good. You know, when they designed that Durango, you know, when I was in middle, no, I'm just kidding. when they designed that Durango a long time ago, I mean, something, it was so right, except it's expensive, right? I mean,
sure.
I did the video with it and I said, all of us should have one.
That's fair, but, man. That's the best way to take your kids to soccer practice, for
but
sure.
But it's $80,000. So
yeah,
maybe all of us can't have one,
right,
but all of us should have one. So anyways, yeah, so it could be a lot of fun. And like you said, maybe they did push. I was thinking about this. You know, the Raptor R, right? It's a 720 horsepower truck on 37s with a, you know, pretty sophisticated suspension. Where do they go from here?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no, it's fair. And how much, you know, how much are people going to spend, especially when you really get to the higher echelon? Yeah, aren't you just going to go buy like a custom tube frame buggy, or, you know, straight to the trophy truck, go get a spec trophy truck or something like that? Like, yeah, I don't know, man. I'm sure they're coming up with something, you know, they got to. But and even, yeah, talking about a limiting factor, the 37s, as I'm sure you know, they actually limit wheel travel. So the best truck for going fast in the desert is the Raptor with 35s. So there's already one thing where they've hit that wall of going, oh, actually, we're decreasing some performance by stepping up to this larger tire. And that's just one example. But yeah, I don't know how much further they can push it, man.
Yeah, totally. And maybe the next frontier is the lowering, right? Maybe you're going back to a little bit more sporty for the street while still maintaining the off-road trucks, like you said, right? You can't get rid of, don't take our off-roaders away.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I'm like, I love the sport trucks, but if we all sacrifice those, as long as we keep the off-roaders, because we are spoiled for choice these days as off-roaders. If you have a budget for a new vehicle, there's so many good choices, right? Budget off-road trims, mid off-road trims, crazy off-road trims.
So what's going on like next year? Do you have any like stuff brewing that you can tell me about, or just a lot more snow digging, you know, and off-roading?
Yeah, you know, there's definitely going to be some videos out in the snow and the ice for sure. Yeah, nothing really planned too far into the future right now. I will tell you the product that I am most excited to get on next year is the Yamaha Crosswave. I don't know if you saw that thing. It's Yamaha's newest wave runner. It's got like an open bow design. So it's actually like you can walk all the way around it. It looks so cool. It looks so different from any other wave runner or Sea-Doo or jet ski that's out there. And I'm so curious about it. It looks like the ultimate adventure PWC. Like there's storage bins everywhere. It looks so crazy, man. It looks like nothing else out there. So I am very excited to get on the Yamaha Crosswave. And then I'm also excited for the Rev, man, the Ram Rev. We don't have details on when we're going to be in one, but I'm assuming we will be driving one in 2026. And that's exciting. I think that's a product that should have been here years ago. A plug-in hybrid pickup truck should already be on the market. So the fact that we're finally getting one and getting one that's so interesting because it's not just a plug-in hybrid, right? It's the range extended EV. So it'll be a cool one. I'm excited to hear details on that and when we'll be actually getting our butts in seats.
Yeah, I second that one as well. And you're kind of the king of the water sport, I would say. Because you know me, I love my ski boat, but right now it's in storage and we can't do well. Not that you can go swimming right now outside, but
we have a short season, man. We got to take advantage of our 4 months if we're lucky.
No, but you have some history with that, right? You have a history with water sports. And you're quite good at that. So
Well, you know what? Actually, I will give Roman props because in 2015, I bought a brand new Sea-Doo. And then I started at TFL in 2017. And one of my very first videos was like Roman and I brainstorming. And I was like, hey, I own a Sea-Doo. He's like, hey, review it. So I was like, okay, I've never reviewed a Sea-Doo before, but I own it. I spent my own money on this thing. So I did that video, and that video caught on fire, went huge, and I've kind of never looked back. I've been reviewing Sea-Doos and PWCs ever since. I've done a few boats. I've kind of crossed over. Those videos have not done great. It seems no one cares what I think about boats, which is fine. I'll stick to PWCs. I love doing that stuff, man. I just like doing different stuff, right? It's fun to do a truck video and then head on the water the next day and do a wave runner video. I upgraded my fleet this summer. I bought a 1997 Wave Runner Wave Venture 700. So I bought myself an old Wave Runner too. So that's been fun. It's always fun to have toys.
That's sweet. And Big Green is still kicking around, right? Big Green is still around.
Big Green's still good, man. It's in storage now. I take it off the road for the winter, so it's not out in the salt. For the most part, it's doing all right. I think honestly, the biggest job I've done since I've taken it is I switched out the high pressure fuel pump. I think we've talked about this. So the Phytech high pressure pump, it was never good. It always had issues. You guys went through, I think, one or two of them. And so then is it any wonder that Phytech fully redesigned it? So I actually reached out to Phytech and said, hey, I'm trying to do this. Here's my truck. Can I get one? And they said, yep, we have a whole new design. Here it is. So it's brand new. I installed it 2 years ago now, and it's been flawless. It made the truck that much more reliable, and it's been perfect. So yeah, kudos to Phytech.
I'm so happy because I know you and I have struggled so much with some of that fuel starvation. Basically wouldn't start.
Bogged down. The one, it stranded me a couple times, but the worst one was I went off road with the truck and I did this like really steep decline, like staring straight at the ground kind of thing. So I came down, pop up, the truck's running, and then dead. And I'm like, geez. And that was it, man. It was just, I starved that little fuel bowl in that high pressure pump because of the angle. And once it loses pressure, it took forever to get it back, but it did start. But yeah, it was a pain in the butt.
So. Yeah.
So that's going. And then, I love driving that truck, man. And I work it. This summer, I built a new little pathway in my backyard out to my pool. So I put just over 2,000 pounds of limestone screening in the bed of Big Green. And it was better than I thought. Like, I really expected it. Talking about overloaded trucks, I really expected it to be sketchy and terrifying, and it was fine. And so I put in Skyjacker suspension. So that's kudos to Skyjacker. But power felt good. Handling, it hunkered down real nice, but it did good. So I love having it. I just having a pickup truck around, you can't beat it. There's so many jobs that you can accomplish when you have a truck. So I do miss it when it's off the road. The second the fall comes and I got to take it off the road, I start going, what am I going to do around here? I need my truck. I got jobs to do. So.
I also get sad when I have to put my boat away, right?
Yeah,
It's like
exactly.
October or September, October, and I'm like, well, there goes another one, right? So, no, totally. I
Yeah,
get
same
it.
vibes. Yeah, so it's sleeping in my dad's barn next to his 71 Chevy. The two old Chevys, they sleep in there together, so.
I wonder if they're exchanging stories, maybe.
Who knows?
All
Comparing owners.
right, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on this podcast episode. I think we have a lot of fun talking, so well, hopefully I'll see you maybe even soon, so who knows.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Andre. This was a blast, man. I mean, there's just so much to talk about with pickup trucks, and this was a pretty meandering podcast, but that's what's fun, just because, yeah, there's so much to talk about, and what we do is so similar, obviously, so we're always talking about and complaining about the same things. So it was good chatting trucks, man. And Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everybody
Yes.
out there and to you.
Yeah, same thing. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas. I really appreciate your time, and like I said, we should collaborate maybe a little bit more. So it should be fun.
Sure, man. I'd like that.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Take care, everybody.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.